From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, messages from nightmares. And autumn has arrived. Here we go. Here's what's happening. A new variant of COVID-19 with deadly mutations that give it increased resistance to any antibodies discovered now in a Kentucky nursing home. The variant is called R1. It infected 45 residents and employees in the facility, including some who were fully vaccinated. My gosh. The Food and Drug Administration has authorized Pfizer tonight their booster shots for people above the age of 65 or who are at high risk. In a press statement, the FDA said it was approving a single booster shot for certain people to be administered at least 6 months after receiving their first two doses. These groups include individuals 65 and older and individuals 18 to 64 who are either at high risk of severe COVID-19 or who work in high-risk places. But have you noticed lately that people seem to be tense? We're checking in with Howard Bloom, author of The Global Brain. Howard, they're uptight these days.
Well, let's start with COVID, and then we'll get down to the tension. America's in trouble. We're at war with COVID, and the Delta variant of COVID is beating us. 2 months ago, on July 17th, we had only 83 deaths in a single day. Now our daily death toll is topping 2,000. As of today, the grand total of deaths we've racked up since the beginning of the COVID crisis is over 680,000. That's more than the Spanish flu of 1918 to 1921. We Americans lead the world in COVID deaths. As of today, Idaho's hospitals are so full that they are turning away patients and leaving them to go out of state or to die. And hospitals in Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Florida, and Arkansas are overwhelmingly stressed. Now, why are we doing so badly? We have the lowest vaccination rate of any nation in the G7, the seven most important democracies in the world. There's a reason. It's the battle of belief systems that you and I have talked about before. That battle has changed the very nature of the pandemic here in America. The pandemic is over for folks who have been vaccinated. At most, it gives vaccinated people an infection that acts like a mild cold. But the pandemic is getting more and more deadly for those who refuse the vaccine. Over 95% of COVID deaths are striking down just one population, the unvaccinated. Today, People magazine highlighted a strong and healthy 24-year-old father in Montana who believed, in his words, that the vaccine was not a real vaccine, that it was like a tracking chip that the government was trying to use on us. When the 24-year-old was hospitalized with COVID, he told NBC News from his hospital bed that what he had heard was just a whole bunch of crap that isn't true. This is very real, he said. It's very scary. He concluded that as soon as I can, I'm getting the vaccine. And I highly recommend anyone who hasn't to do it because this is a very scary situation. The young father never got the chance to get the vaccine. The weekend of September 18th, he died. Meanwhile, Republican Kentucky Senator Rand Paul sent out a mailer saying, I desperately need more allies in the U.S. Senate willing to join my fight to end all lockdowns and fire Anthony Fauci and the mask mafia. Voices like Rand Paul's are killing Americans. Meanwhile, as you said, Americans are on edge. Roughly one-sixth are drinking heavily, according to a new Harris poll. And 16 to 24-year-olds are battling anxiety about a climate apocalypse. Yep. According to a global survey of 10,000 kids, 60% say they are profoundly worried about the climate crisis. 75% say the future is frightening. But with or without a climate crisis, 23% of adult Americans have not had the shot. And vaccine refusal is suicide. You asked me many months ago if I knew anyone who had COVID. I didn't then, but I do now. Emmy-winning film director Charlie Hoxie, the director of the award-winning feature-length documentary about me, The Grand Unified Theory of Howard Bloom, came down with COVID 3 weeks ago. All he had were the symptoms of a mild cold. Charlie had been vaccinated. Meanwhile, another friend is Robert David Steele, the world's leading expert on open-source intelligence. I wrote the preface for one of Robert's books. Robert came down with COVID roughly a month ago, but he was a ferocious anti-vaccine warrior. He had not been vaccinated. To my shock and horror, 3 weeks ago, Robert died. So did five radio hosts who told their audiences that COVID was a hoax. In 1 month, August, all five of them died. The bottom line is that no matter what you believe, please, please get vaccinated.
Well, it is far from a hoax, Howard, that's for sure. Thank you. A law enforcement underwater dive team has arrived at a nature reserve in Florida. They've called it quits for the night. They're going to resume tomorrow. As part of the search for Brian Laundrie, Gabby Petito's fiancé, who has been missing for several days. She has turned up dead. They have ruled that a homicide. A large van and boat from the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office arrived midday Wednesday at the Carlton Reserve, which is a swampy 25,000-acre reserve in Venice, Florida, where Laundrie told his parents he was headed last week. The dive team, called the Sheriff's Underwater Recovery Force, is made up of highly trained underwater specialists who are called upon to search for evidence of crimes and victims of drowning, water accidents, and foul play. They suspect that maybe he might have killed himself. That's possible. John Walsh now, the television expert who lost his son Adam years ago, believes that Laundrie is escaped and is somewhere, but has taken off. U.S. stocks posting strong gains but finished off session highs after the Federal Reserve signaled tapering would likely begin later this year, and the interest rate hikes will start in 2022. So here we go. And the Federal Reserve won't come to the economy's rescue if the U.S. defaults on its debt, according to the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Let's check in now with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, here we go.
Here's two stories here, George. Well, the laugh of the day here is the Fed report. It was literally identical. They changed like two or three words from the word a month ago, 2 months ago. And now what they're saying is they might begin to taper later this year. Same message, essentially a repeat. But tapering just means they're going to reduce the pace at which they are adding to their balance sheet. George, it's long time that they should have stopped adding to their balance sheet because they're doing reverse repos at a record rate now, which is the reverse of adding to the balance sheet. It takes away $1.2 trillion in reverse repos. They're taking away what they're doing. By the time the Fed gets around to actually tapering and say they're going to start hiking rate hikes, George, I think we're going to be heading into the next recession. So they're just never going to get there. Meanwhile, Janet Yellen is stirring up a fuss, and some of these headlines are really quite laughable. The time is running out. We're going to lose 6 million jobs. We've got an economic catastrophe. A Washington Post headline said a U.S. default would cost 6 million jobs and $15 trillion in wealth. George, how many times do we have to play this out? There's not going to be a default. Either the Republicans are going to blink or the Democrats are going to blink or both of them
are
going
to blink.
You know, but the interesting thing about this, though, is stocks have been sliding this month. Now, they've rallied a bit over the last couple of days. But one factor that this could play on is, and you touched upon it in Howard in the last, that people are on edge. I think we're going to have a psychology change here in the market. I think COVID might be a part of it. We've also got tax hikes on deck. We've got people worried about global warming. We have an extremely overvalued stock market. There's credit defaults mounting over in China that's playing on commodity prices. It's going to be hard to say precisely what the trigger is going to be, but the clock's not running out on the debt clock here. The clock is running out on this recovery that's almost over, and the Fed hasn't even started hiking yet.
We're going to watch your predictions, Mish. Thank you so much. Multiple clowns have been spotted loitering around schools in Singapore, staring intently, approaching pupils and asking young children to follow them. Their unnerving presence sparked a flurry of complaints from concerned parents who immediately called on police to investigate. Singapore police confirmed that they had received numerous reports regarding the clown's presence outside different schools and that officers had linked the bizarre stunt to a private education center which had dreamed up the idea in an apparent bid to attract recruits to its speech school. I don't think that's going to work. Well, today was the fall equinox, the beginning of autumn, bringing the Earth about 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of night, and a renegade space rock measuring about three times the size of the Statue of Liberty. This asteroid, called 2021 NY1, sailed harmlessly past planet Earth, came to about 970,000 miles away from Earth. That's still too close for my comfort. Well, as we've been talking about, people are tense and uptight these days. In a moment, two special guests will join us. Their latest work is called A Hunter's Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century, Evolution and the Challenges of Modern Life. We're going to talk about tension right now on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. No matter where you go these days, people are uptight, they are tense, they are irritable. I've never seen anything like this in all my life. We brought in a couple guests that we're going to address what's going on. They wrote the book, A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century. Let me introduce a couple of them. First of all, Brett Weinstein is with us, and Heather Hine are evolutionary biologists who have been invited to address the U.S. Congress, the Department of Justice, the Department of Education, and have spoken before large audiences across this planet. They both earned PhDs in biology from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, where their research on evolution and adaption earned awards for its quality and innovation. They've been visiting fellows at Princeton University before. They were professors at the Evergreen State College for a number of years. Brett and Heather also co-host weekly live streams of the Dark Horse podcast. Let's welcome them both in. Brett and Heather, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
It's good to have you both here. And what I'll do once we get going here is I'll just toss out the question and you two point to each other and decide who's going to answer it. Fair enough?
Sounds good.
Super. And you went to a great university, by the way. I grew up in Detroit and loved watching the Michigan Wolverines play their Saturday football games all the time.
Maize and blue.
Yeah, were you there when Bo Schembechler was the coach?
I don't believe so.
So you were there after that, probably.
Yes.
Anyways, let's talk a little bit about your work, A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century. Are our perceptions, Brett and Heather, correct when I'm saying that people seem uneasy and tense? All because all kinds of things that have been happening to us lately. But is it there? Do you feel it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we all know that we are having a crisis, and it's an existential crisis at the individual level all the way to the societal level. So what we have tried to do is apply an evolutionary understanding of humans to help us make sense of this hyper-novel world we're living in, where the rate of change is outpacing even our extraordinary human ability to navigate.
You get into a lot of things in the book, including special diets for people, technology, spirituality, religion, parenting as well. But there's something that you call hyper-novelty. What is that?
Well, human beings are the most adaptable creatures that have ever evolved. But there's a limit to how quickly we can change. And we all realize that we don't live even in the world that we were born into. By the time we reach adulthood, things have changed so substantially that we're constantly back on our heels. And what we argue in the book is that effectively the rate of change is accelerating, and we have outstripped our capacity to adapt to it. Even our excellent evolutionary toolkit is not up to the challenge.
Tell me more about that.
Well, if you think about the difference between the world that we were all born into and the one that we currently live in, The reality of spending much of your time, even your work time, interacting with people that you may not be present with directly, interacting socially with people who may or may not be real, these things are bewildering to the mind. And what is special about humans is that if you think back to what human beings have done throughout our history on this planet, we've done many different things. Some populations have hunted marine mammals, other populations have terraced hillsides and farmed them. So we're very good at moving from one kind of opportunity to the next, but that requires that the opportunity, once it's discovered, persists for a number of generations. And that is not where we live now. Now, we don't even know what jobs to train you for in college because we don't know what will be available in 10 years, how people will be living.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Brett and Heather, we do live broadcasts on holidays, which is pretty unusual for a talk show. Most talk shows run tapes on the holidays. And we do it primarily because there are a lot of people out there who are lonely because they look for this show as their comfort and their friends. And I got a call a couple of weeks ago from a lady who was sobbing. She had lost her husband, and she said, this program, this show that I listen to, your program, is my only direct link to other people. And I stopped and thought about that for a while, about how many lonely people there are out there who don't have anybody. It's at almost like an epidemic, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. And it reminds me a little bit of some of the experiences that we had when we were in the classroom, when we were professors, and much of what we did was educate young people and not so young people. Actually, our classrooms were filled with grandmothers and veterans and people first time in college, and you know, the whole range of human experience, really. And certainly part of what we were teaching was science and philosophy of science and how to think and statistics and these things. But also what we were doing was we were coming together in community. And you know, one of the themes we talk about in the book is campfire, the value of campfire. And what that value is being in a situation with other people where the stakes are low, where you're not going to mistake disagreement with another human being for dislike of that human being, and where you can try things out, where you can say things for which you aren't going to be held accountable for the rest of your life and come back to people and say, oh, actually, that wasn't right, or I'm sorry, or I was right, and here's how I'd like to explore that. And so, I mean, I think a show like this certainly offers that, and all of us should be hoping for and trying to make opportunities for more connection like this and also in real life.
I saw a hilarious video clip of the late Robin Williams on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and that guy was funny. But it was so sad to think about how he committed suicide and ended his life. Suicides seem to be at an all-time high these days as well. People seem to be more depressed, aren't they?
Well, human beings are built to look for opportunity. And unfortunately, a great many of us look out at the world around us and don't see where we fit. And that's both a very bewildering situation and a disheartening one. And it's not terribly surprising that when people try and discover that nothing seems to work, even though it isn't their fault, they didn't create the world that doesn't offer them an opportunity, nonetheless, it does leave them quite hopeless.
Well, there's no question about that. And you say also that technology sometimes can go too far, don't you?
Yes, and probably, again, everyone will recognize that that's true. And, you know, we identify a few of the ways that we think technology may be making us chaotic thinkers and causing us to be more terrible to one another than we might otherwise be. But while we definitely go some new places in terms of why we think the problems are happening, it's nothing new to observe that we are being deranged to some degree by the lack of direct contact, by having so much of our interactions be done with this layer between us that is technological.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Brett.
Oh, I was just going to add, that said, although it's clear that the primacy of the internet in all of our lives is creating a lot of distance, it's also allowing the bridging of distance. And your program and our podcast, the Dark Horse podcast, does provide a kind of rallying point for people. So I think it isn't as simple as technology is the problem. Technology is just simply interfacing with what we are in an arbitrary way, and what we need to learn to do is to leverage the parts of it that are useful and be cautious about the parts that may be harmful.
Brad and Heather, when we come back, I want to ask you both about social networking and what you think it's doing to us as well. The name of their latest book is called A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century, Evolution and the Challenges of Modern Life. It's available on Amazon and all over the place. Their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're going to take your calls with Brett and Heather next hour here on Coast to Coast. Brett and Heather, social network, it could be nice, it could be a blessing, it could be a disaster for a lot of people, especially those people who are sensitive and get ganged up on and picked on through others on social networking. So what do you think? Is it a blessing or a curse?
Well, on Dark Horse, we frequently say it's not the box, it's the business model. And there's no question that social media has tremendous potential to bring us together and to help us make sense of the world. But the problem is that the business model is predatory. And unfortunately, it comes to us in a form that is deranging. The algorithms that control search and feed are causing us to see a world that flatters our preconceptions, that tells us what we want to hear rather than what we need to know. And so it really is the case that if you look around, you'll see there are factions, and people really believe that those on the other side are insane. And the way we've come to that conclusion is because we are constantly being told things that reinforce what we already believe, and we are not being challenged by the things that would tell us we have something wrong. So to the extent that we are becoming more polarized and having a harder time recognizing each other as members of the same country even, this is really caused by the technology and the rapid rate of change.
Which leads us into a question about parenting and kids these days. What's happening there?
It's related. We argue in the book, as some others do in this space, that children, that many of us are not understanding what childhood is, first of all. That childhood is the moment, the many, many years during which we are learning how to be human. And if what your goal is only to have your child survive to their 18th birthday, you can basically guarantee that by wrapping them in bubble wrap and keeping them away from all risk and all experience. And they will survive, but they will arrive at 18 alive, but with the mind of a child. And we argue, therefore, that it is necessary to expose your child to risk and to adventure and to serendipity and to allow them to play freely, unstructured, to make up their own rules, to make up their own games, to choose the people who they are playing with. And this is not an excuse for bullying. It's not an excuse for disrespect or for meanness. But how is it that we expect people, when they are adults, to learn how not to be bullies, to not be mean, to not be disrespectful, if they haven't done so as children? This isn't something you can learn from a book. You have to do it by actually engaging with other people without an authority figure. And when you're a child, that might be a parent or a teacher or even an older sibling coming in, swooping in and saying, no, that's not how it's done. Those are not the most lasting lessons.
Now, in your book, of course, which is nonfiction, obviously, what would you like somebody who reads it to pull away from it and get?
I think the most important thing is to realize you're not alone. Everyone is confused by the situation they find themselves in. But there is actually what we call the evolutionary toolkit, which is a set of concepts that allows you to understand yourself, to understand what it was you were built for, and how it is well-matched and poorly matched for the world you find yourself in. And at the point you spot those patterns, you can adjust what you choose to interact with, what you choose to avoid, in such a way that is simplifying, that is gratifying, and that makes you more effective.
What do you think the best type of parent could be? Somebody who schools their kids closely and monitors what they do, someone who just lets them go? What do you think a good parent is?
It's going to be context dependent, of course, dependent on who you are, who your children are, what your situation is. We have known children who were brilliantly parented by parents who unschooled their children, right, who effectively let their children run wild, by children who were homeschooled, who were formally schooled, you know, the entire gamut. But what we do argue is that no matter what your formal or lack of formal education may be like, a parent who loves you dearly and holds you as close as possible when you're very, very young and gives you more and more freedom as you age, because you have become a trustworthy young being who actually knows how to navigate the world, that is a child who is going to grow up into a wise, joyful, and, yes, productive adult.
Tell me about the title, A Hunter's Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century.
Well, in evolutionary theory, we recognize that creatures are built for the environments in which they evolved. And our ancestors spent a very long time on the plains of Africa. They were hunter-gatherers, mm-hmm. and those skills are resident within us. But it is also the case that we have been in many other environments. The farther back you go, the more remote these things are, but they have all left a hallmark on how we function. And recognizing that we are effectively adapted to these past environments, and we find ourselves in a brand new environment that shares some of the characteristics, but not others, leads you to ask the question, what is it that I should be seeking? Where should I try to place myself so that what I am built to do is best adapted?
You know, what's interesting, too, is even though people are stressed, I think, to the max and things like that, it seems like the planet as a whole is also stressed. Earthquakes are bigger. Hurricanes are bigger. Climate change seems to be more drastic. Is there a tie in there?
We lost you for a second. Could you just restate the question, please, George?
Yeah, the planet itself seems to be as strange as the individuals are these days with the hurricanes and all these things. Is there a connection there?
Yeah, there is. The planet is suffering effectively from the same disorder that we individuals have. We are systems that are self-regulating, as is the planet. But when you begin to push certain parameters beyond their limits, they cause cascading effects. And so what you're seeing are a great many symptoms of what is effectively the impact of industrialization, which has altered the chemistry of the atmosphere, it's altered the chemistry of the oceans, it's altered the reflectivity of the planet, and these things are all interacting to create novel weather, to drive creatures extinct, to create pathways for pathogens to leap from one continent to the next. And, you know, it is very much analogous to the disorders that we humans experience.
Our guests are Brett Weinstein and Heather Hine. They are authors of the book, A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century. We're going to take calls with them next hour here on Coast to Coast. You address in the book religion, and that's pretty aggressive, I think. Let's talk about that.
Sure. What we argue is that essentially you have to understand that culture is another way that information, which is evolutionary, moves through time. It is no less biological than our genes. And the patterns in our cultures that are longstanding and have a cost are patterns that moved through time because they paid back. And paying back doesn't necessarily come in the form of telling you what's literally true, but what it does is tells you how to behave in such a way that you are more effective, more likely to leave descendants who will be around for many years into the future. So the religions of the world, we understand them to be compendiums of wisdom that adjust our behavior in a positive way. But the problem is they too are adapted to environments that we no longer live in. So although religions are compendiums of wisdom, the wisdom doesn't necessarily apply to the world that we currently live in.
Would you prefer that more people would be spiritual as opposed to religious?
Yeah, spiritual is a word that many people use when they think they need to reject the formal religion of the past,
right.
But they aren't prepared to leave it entirely. And so it means so many different things to so many people. We are speaking as secular folk with an explicitly evolutionary, therefore scientific bent, but we honor religion as an adaptive and often necessary and very important part of both human history and the human present. So I think religion has been so important, and the ways that it has been organized have been myriad across the world. It's not just the things that we have names for now. It's not just Christianity and Judaism and Islam and such. And all too often, it seems that those who say they are spiritual are actually just still seeking the meaning that they may have given up on from what would have been an organized religion.
What drove you both to get your PhDs in biology?
I would say fascination. You know, once you begin to understand the process that creates creatures and shapes them, the world is a marvelous place. You know, one can spend a lifetime looking at the complexity in a single square meter of your backyard, right?
Yeah.
It's miracle after miracle. And I would just say there's something marvelous about looking at all of creation with a set of tools to understand what it means and how it came to be that way.
How about you, Heather? What got you in biology?
Well, to some degree, it was Brett, actually. But I was a teenager looking for meaning, as I think all teenagers do. And I was looking to a variety of traditions, in fact, and I was dabbling in things like Buddhism, and there was a lot of value there, and I retained some of the value from that. But at the point, in fact, that Brett handed me a book by Richard Dawkins, which was an exploration of some of the meaning that an evolutionary understanding of who we are can bring, everything seemed to fall together, and it wasn't complete, and it's not to say that it's all you. Art is a necessary part of the human experience, for instance, as well. Science is not sufficient, but this evolutionary toolkit that I began to see glimmers of as a teenager has become so valuable in making sense of so many disparate areas of life.
I have a grandchild who is studying to be a biologist, and she absolutely loves it. Loves it.
Yeah, it's an amazing subject. It's quite addictive.
You have talked about what you call the nature-nurture debate. What is that?
Well, the nature-nurture debate is really quite an old argument, and it's about whether or not what we are is the result of the programming in our genes or the result of what we interact with after we are born. And in our book, we argue for a different way of understanding the question. Effectively, we are not a blank slate the way some people would have it, but evolutionarily, we are the blankest slate that has ever existed on this planet. And there's a reason for that. The blankness of our program when we are born and our very long childhoods are the key to our flexibility. They are the thing that allows us to exist in so many different habitats and do so many different functional things. They're the key to the difference between individual human beings, that someone may be an incredible athlete, a gymnast, someone else may be incredibly insightful about mathematics. And that flexibility is entirely the result of not being overly programmed at birth.
We're taking calls next hour with Brett and Heather. Jump on board if you have witnessed people stressed to the max and everything else. Share your input with us or just drop a question or two to them as well. We'll be doing that next hour here. We evolved when, as you say in your book, living in clans, but today some people don't even know their neighbors' names, do they?
No, they don't. Probably very few of us know all of our neighbors' names, and those few of us who do have lived where we do for a very long time. Because we are, one of the amazing things about modern times is our freedom to make choices that our ancestors could not have imagined. But of course, with those choices come some negatives. And it is not dishonoring the value of modernity to say there are costs as well.
In the old days, I used to remember neighbors coming over to our house or my folks going over to theirs. They were sitting on the porch together and chit-chatting. Nobody does that anymore.
Right. We all think we're too busy, right? We all think we're too busy, and we have better things to do. And if we consider how much of our time we waste and are looking at screens, interacting with people we probably will never meet in person, when we could be exchanging a kind word with someone with whom we share a street, it seems like when phrased that way, would put that way, having a five-minute conversation with your neighbor is probably the use of your time that you will remember for longer and value more later on.
And in addition to Amazon, can people get your book at bookstores?
Well, I have to say, the book has been so incredibly successful in its first week that it is a little bit hard to find at the moment. But we would ask people to know there are more books on the way, and that even if a bookseller says it doesn't have any copies at the moment, that we are promised a large shipment is headed their direction.
Selling out books is a good thing, by the way.
Been told.
Yeah.
All right, stay with us, you two. We're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls. We'll open up the phone lines with all kinds of questions for you. Brett Weinstein, Heather Hein with us. Their website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The name of the book, A Hunter's Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century Evolution and the Challenges of Modern Life.